listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa. Today we are in Punta Destaca de Bares.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with a mesmerized Daniel Freeb. Daniel, can you concentrate for a moment or two?
Just about. You know what I'm like around sort of late 90s climbers, Rich?
We are in the presence of Fernando Erskartin, yeah. The former Kelme rider.
I've got a weakness for slightly unconventional late 90s climbers, haven't I?
Yeah. Well, we're in the midst of Fernando Erskartin, who now works for the race organisation. We were in the midst a moment or two ago of a gentleman with a large bandage on his head.
That was Chema Rodriguez, who is the head of media operations at Finish Lines at the Vuelta, and he became quite infamous for 15 minutes today, didn't he?
There was a sickening incident just beyond the finishing line when the first and second on stage, Alexander Genies and Dylan van Baarle collided with him. It seemed to take quite a blow to the head, so
Escartin's having a banana now.
It's quite a relief to see him up and about, and apparently none the worse for wear. Quite a day on the Vuelta today, Daniel.
Quite a green banana. He's a man after my heart. I don't like my bananas very ripe, and Escartin is similar.
Can we focus on what happened today at the Vuelta?
Yes,
we're in wet and windy Galicia. I feel at home here because this. Driving, Welsh than Scottish, less rugged than Scotland, but as green as Wales.
But we were at the northernmost point of the Iberian Peninsula today, weren't we? So you should feel very at home, Richard. Today we were at the Spanish John O'Groats. Is that what you call it? John O'Groats?
Yeah, I haven't heard it really said like that before.
Well,
but anyway,
how do you say it?
John O'Groats. Just a bit quicker.
Just a bit gruffer.
Yeah, you put the emphasis on the O. Anyway, stage 12, Montoñedo to Faro de Estaca de Bares.
Is that a lighthouse?
Is that a correct pronunciation?
Yeah.
Both new places for the Vuelta. Stage never started and finished there. Again, very like yesterday, it was all out from the start. And once again, the first protagonist was Vincenzo Nibali.
I've been distracted by something else. The issue of... So I read today, this is where the Cantabrian Sea joins the Atlantic Ocean. I'm much more familiar with mountains than I am sea and oceans and oceanography. When does a sea become an ocean? And how does a sea... How can one sea end and an ocean begin at a seemingly arbitrary point?
Well, I don't think there's a difference between a sea and an ocean. I think they're the same thing. They're just two different words for the same thing.
No, they're not. I think it's a question of dimensions. But anyway, sorry, what were you saying about the race?
Is the ocean not the entire ocean?
If you read the information in the road book about today's stage, it tells us that the where we finish today is the meeting point or the line of demarcation between the Cantabrian Sea and the Atlantic Ocean.
Well, I'm sure somebody listening will know. Anyway, I was giving my tale of the etapa. Nibali was joined by a big group of riders, and they, well, among them were Alexander Genies, Dylan Turns, Davide Formolo, Thomas De Gendt, of course, Dylan van Baarle, Gianluca Brambilla, Valerio Conti, who we've not seen a lot of Italians, Jesus Herrada from Cofidis, and they began to open up a big gap. Herrada was the best rider on GC, 5:45 down, 22nd overall, and by 50 kilometres he was the virtual leader. The lead just kept growing. 10:30 with 62 kilometres to go, it grew beyond 11 minutes. Formolo was very, very aggressive on the second climb, the Alto de San Pedro, and he was the second at the top behind De Gendt, with Brambilla third. Again, a bit like yesterday, it was quite anarchic. There was a lot of attacking. It was really good riders knocking lumps out of each other. You know, good riders who are good at winning races, basically, attacking each other left, right and centre. Numerous groups splintering off, coming back together, regrouping. And on the run in here, on this rugged coast, Van Baarle seemed to often be in the wrong place and seemed to be making quite big efforts to get himself back into contention. But in the end, he was, and he came in with that group to the front, to the finish. a group of about five, was it, at the finish? Or eight, sorry. There were eight riders into the finish there. And it was Genies who opened the sprint first. And that was the right thing to do because it was incredibly narrow. I mean, we were talking about this stage as potentially a bunch sprint, which was ludicrous. But it would have been ludicrous had there been a bigger group than that there. It was pretty chaotic. And the incident beyond the finish line really was a direct result of the narrowness of it. Because the photographers were there. There wasn't a lot of space, was there?
Imagine what would have happened if a peloton had come in for a bunch sprint there.
Doesn't bear thinking
about. Well, and quite a few riders, I think, this morning, or there were people who thought that today could end in a bunch sprint. I spoke to Elia Viviani, and he was certainly hoping that it would end in a bunch sprint. But it's a bit of a recurring theme in this Vuelta. It's a bit like one of old Vincenzo Torriani's Giri, the old Giro boss. Vincenzo Torriani was famous for creating Giro routes or publishing profiles, route profiles that bore no relation to the actual route on the road. And I've heard quite a lot of that at this Vuelta. Quite a few riders saying that, you know, in spite of all of the technology they use now, they have fantastic briefings in the team buses before stages, which are getting longer and longer. They're, you know, standard going rate now for a briefing is about 20-25 minutes, isn't it? And they see videos, they have very detailed breakdowns of the finishes, and yet quite a few of them have been surprised by what they found.
But they get a lot of their information not from the roadbook. I mean, clearly they're relying on more than just what's in the roadbook.
Well, yes, but I think even the information they've been fed by their teams at the Vuelta, to a certain extent, there has been occasions when it's not really conveyed quite how difficult or how complicated or narrow the route has actually been. I've heard that a few times. Jack Haig said it today. Certainly the roadbook itself is fairly, I wouldn't say slapdash, but it's quite vague. Vague, I would say.
Just to finish the tale of Etapa, Jesus Herrada is the new leader by 3:22 over Simon Yates. Valverde remains in the points jersey. Luis Angulmati remains in King of the Mountains jersey. Barry Morita, top team.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. Reminder, coming up a week on Saturday the 15th is the Women's 100, the Cycling Podcast Femina Women's 100. Right, I'm bringing this up deliberately because Daniel,
I'm not allowed to comment.
Two cafe stops, 100 kilometres, which is frankly more than I'd be capable of at the moment. And I think about 15 have signed up for that. The ride will be led by Hannah Nicklin, Orla Shinawee, and Rose Manley will be there as well. And I'm really looking forward to hearing how that goes. And I'm sorry I can't be there. But go to rafa.cc. You can still sign up. And scroll right down. Find a Women's 100 ride. Scroll right down. You'll find the Cycling Podcast Femina ride. God, it's windy, isn't it?
It is windy. Fran Race is going to be on the podcast later, Rich.
Yep.
Alas, I'll be gone. I'll be off down the motorway at that point. I would like you to quiz Fran about the culture of cafe stops on bike rides in Spain. Because in Italy... I don't think it's really as much of an institution as it is in Britain. Anyway, that's my last word on this subject.
You won't let this go, will you?
It gets very controversial when I comment on this issue.
Yeah, well, let's move on. I mean, the race, it was, it's interesting. Again, we said a lot, but you don't see this sort of racing at the Tour de France, do you? It's much more controlled. And here, that big group went. Jesus Herrada is the new red jersey. I mean, he's a good rider, you know. He's a good, strong rider. He's 3:20 ahead, and we do see this. You know, the leader's jersey gives you wings, doesn't it? Is he an outside threat because he's got a decent lead? He's a good proven rider. He's a good climber.
He's finished in the top 10 in the Tour de Romandie a couple of times. He's ridden a lot of Tours de France, actually. He has never ridden the Vuelta before. He's a guy with GC pedigree, certainly was thought of in his amateur career as a budding GC star, but has not really fulfilled his potential. However, he also left Movistar for that reason, to get more opportunities, and he's getting an opportunity at Cofidis. So who knows, he might surprise us. Worth bearing in mind, though, that Movistar were effectively, they were one of the teams that gave their blessing for him to take the jersey today. And Movistar know him very well. He was there for 7 years. So I think if he really did pose a serious threat, they wouldn't have let him take, well, get 3 minutes 20 on GC. Or I think he'll keep it tomorrow, though, yeah. La Camperona.
Or was it a continuation of this standoff between Mitchelton Scott and Movistar? They seem to be cooperating quite well today, sort of sharing the responsibility of keeping the move. Although I say that, I mean, the lead didn't really come down an awful lot. I mean, it stabilised at around 10 and a half minutes. And they were working the front, but not, they weren't working too hard. They weren't committing too much to it.
No, I think they kept it at the, I think that they brought it down to a margin to Jesus Hirata that they were very comfortable with. 5 minutes would have been slightly, you know, just the doubt in the backs of a few minds that he might do something incredible. But 3 minutes 20, I think, was about perfect for them. And I think they both needed to take a bit of a breather after yesterday. Yesterday, I think, did a lot of damage, particularly to Movistar.
And today as well was another, well, hard day for the guys up the road, and with three very hard stages coming up. We spoke at the finish, Daniel, to Simon Yates, the deposed leader, who I think, well, I mean, it was quite a bizarre finish because it was so small out where the finish actually was that the buses were parked 7 kilometres away. The riders had to ride 7 kilometres back, and they had to wait until the last riders had finished. Then they rode 7 kilometres back, and then Movistar and Mitchelton Scott
were part of the top of a 25% climb.
It was unbelievable, this climb. And they got, yeah, after finishing the stage and riding 7 kilometres back, they then had this big wall to get up. So one or two not too happy about it, not too thrilled about that, I'm sure. But we spoke to Simon Yates just after he got back to the bus, thinking the media duties were all behind him with him out of the red jersey, but he spoke briefly to us.
So you're back to the bus a bit earlier than other days. I mean, you've lost the jersey today, but are you quite happy about that?
Yes and no. Of course, it's not nice to lose it, but you know, I have bigger ambitions. I hope to take it in Madrid, not here.
Yeah.
You know, still a long way to go. So.
Was there a point today where you decided, you know, the race was shaping up as it was, and you thought that this could be not a bad outcome for me?
Well, we had a plan today anyway to, you know, we'd ride a bit, but we weren't going to force it, and. We didn't really, you know, we didn't try and really force who was in the break and who not, because otherwise it would have been another day like yesterday. And there's a big weekend coming up, so we need to save as much energy as possible.
And how are you feeling, Simon? Just, I mean, if you compare how you feel now to the Giro, I mean, how do you, have you been holding back a bit? I mean, how do you feel going into the sort of final week?
I feel good. It's hard to say, because actually, compared to the Giro, we've only had two really GC days, whereas in Giro it was almost from day one. So yeah, what stage are we now? Stage 12. Yeah. We'd already had three or four major days, and some other smaller days where guys like Tim Wellens and those guys won. You know, there was gaps already. Here we only had 2 days, so I feel good. We'll see how it goes.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
The voice of Seb Piquet, Race Radio at the Tour de France, reminds me to tell you that tonight's episode is sponsored by Harry's Razors. Now, a Harry's Razors pack will be available to you, the listener, for just £3.95 if you go to harrys.com/cycling. That includes everything you need for a close and comfortable shave, including a razor with a weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineer blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel and travel blade cover. Fran, you've been raving about the gel.
Yes, I mean, it's an amazing gel, Rich. I mean, the probably the best gel I've ever tried for shaving.
Oh, you're looking smooth, the bits of your face that you shave.
Exactly, and you can tell I don't have any cuts in my face right now, and it's probably because of the gel. You know, I give, you know, with the pack, it comes some instructions for a good shaving, and on those, I follow them closely. Consciously, I massage my face with hot water, then I put on the gel, and yeah, it was so relaxing, so refreshing.
Okay, you know, but Fran, tell me something about Spanish facial hair on men, because the sideburns are popular, but they tend to be a little sharp,
yeah.
Contador style sideburns. we see a lot of them around here. Although the policemen all have beards in Spain, I realized today.
One out of every two policemen in Spain, they carry a beard.
Is it
because that's
compulsory?
Manly, you know? No, not compulsory, but it makes them feel included, you know, as part of the police forces.
Okay.
Yeah, but sidebars were quite trendy 5 years ago, but lately I don't see those many, you know. I think I am one of the last survivors.
Unusual.
Yeah.
Get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for £3.95. That website address, harrys.com/cycling. That's harrys.com/cycling to get your trial set for £3.95, which includes the razor handle, 5-blade cartridge, foaming shave gel, and travel blade cover. As you might have guessed, I've been joined by Fran Reyes. Daniel has hot-footed it to, well, 2.5-hour drive, I think, to our hotel tonight. Mm. But Fran, that was, well, I was saying to Daniel, similar stage to yesterday's, really. And exciting. I mean, and the race has been turned on its head to some extent. You were hanging around the Cofidis bus at the finish for a bit of reaction. It's a long time since they've had the overall lead in a Grand Tour. In fact, it's 10 years. Sylvain Chavanel was the last one here at the Vuelta. So an unusual position for them to be in.
Yeah, I mean, Cofidis has been walking through the desert, really, for 5-6 years. You know, since Eric Voyer took over the team around the year 2010, they've been struggling to find a real direction. Yvon Sanquer became the GM of the team in 2013, if I recall correctly. They tried with several different GC leaders, but it was always the case that any young guy they would bring in, he would end up leaving the team and performing better wherever he went. And they took one in the team, and it hasn't lived up to the expectations they had. But this year, with Cédric Vasseur on the management, I can tell that they have given a step forward in terms of attitude, in terms of protagonism in the race, and this stage victory with Vuani and this red jersey. These are two unprecedented successes.
They've got two jerseys on the team, haven't they? Because Matty's still in the King of the Mountains jersey. So,
yeah, so quite active, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah, I mean, the Herrada brothers, Jose and Jesus, were signed this year from Movistar just to strengthen them in races like this, I guess, and in week-long stage races as well. And, mm-hmm. I mean, Jesus Herrada, we spoke about it with Daniel in the last part. Again, he's been one of these strong Movistar riders, and we had an episode called Zero this week about Movistar. They're very good at producing strong riders on all terrain, but especially in the mountains. And one of the things that Alex Dowsett said in that episode was about the lack of egos in Movistar, how they are very good at uniting behind a common cause. And that can mean that you don't often know what these guys are actually capable of. And I remember seeing Jesus Herrada last year in Burgos, maybe just before the Vuelta. He was very strong there, and when he was given a chance to shine, he really looked quite promising. And when I heard he was going to Cofidis, it sounded like it could be a good move, that a guy who's never had a chance before might have a chance.
Yeah, especially because in the case of the Herrada brothers, they had kind of stagnated, you know, because I was reading an interview I had with Pablo Lastras 3 years ago, where he was telling me categorically that Jesus Herrada was the future of Spanish cycling, that he could well become a GT winner, you know, and those are quite remarkable predictions, you know. And Pablo Lastras, believe me, he's not a guy who speaks for free. He knows what cycling is about. But in the last couple of years, we hadn't seen Jesus Herrada develop as the same speed that he had in the previous years. So this change of teams was good to take him out of his comfort zone. Wasn't easy because he didn't speak French, he doesn't speak English, so it was a bit of a cultural shock also to move, but it has been good for his performance. And also in the case of his brother Jose, which is one of the best pure climbers there is in Spain, yet in the last years he had fallen into a role of a spot filler rather than a rider that was taken into account for good events. And by the way, I spoke with Jose at the finish line to find out how he was feeling about the success of his brother. May we listen to him?
Yes, let's listen to him.
I'm very happy about what my brother has accomplished. We knew that being so close on the GC and with the big quality breakaways we were seeing these days, he could one day take the red jersey. It's not easy for the stars to align, but they did today with a great number of powerful riders on the head of the race that the peloton couldn't keep under a tight leash. We will defend the red jersey as much as possible. We need to be realistic. Our team can't control the race by itself. If some other team gives us a hand, we will do our best to cooperate. For now, I think we have to enjoy the red jersey and take it as it comes.
So that was Jesus Hurado's brother, Jose, and I guess they've got a difficult day tomorrow, and if he can hold the jersey, then in the days ahead. I don't know where I got that from about Burgos last year. I don't know where, I can't remember where I saw him ride well, but he definitely rode well somewhere.
He won a stage at the Dauphiné 2 years ago. Okay. So maybe that made an impression on you.
He was second in Montreal last year, the Grand Prix Montreal, which is happening this weekend as well. A good rider, and one of these riders who you just never know what they're capable of until they're given a chance to show what they're capable of, you know, and there are so many like that in cycling.
Yeah, and it's so good to see Spanish riders thrive. The other day I was...
For you, maybe.
Especially for me. For the whole Spanish cycling scene, you know. The other day I was speaking to one of my colleagues from the Spanish press, and we were speaking about how we were lacking references here in Spain, because as riders retire, it's true that there is yet a lot of gaps to be filled in the imagination of the people. And having riders from different regions thriving is good. And in this case, Jesús Herrada is one that can well attract the looks and the spirits of people from La Mancha, where he's from.
Now, you spoke to Pablo Lastras as well, his former teammate, Movistar, now a sports director there.
Yeah, former teammate, sports director, and above all, a huge enthusiast of his possibilities. Let's hear from him.
To me, Jesus is more than a former teammate, a friend. We forged a nice friendship since the moment he arrived on the team at only 20 years old, and I believe he deserves a reward like this red jersey. Jesus has a lot of experience. He knows how to ride a Grand Tour. With a 320 advantage, he can keep the jersey for several days. Jesus is one of the best stage chasers in the Spanish peloton. He's part of the 90 generation, the same as Sagan, Bardet, Quiato, Nairo. He has matured gradually, as every rider should, and is reaching his peak at 28 years old, which is when most cyclists reach their best. Sometimes we'd like young talents to develop quickly and be precocious, but sometimes it's better to go step by step. We might see a different, better version of Jesus Herrada from now on. It's a shame he'll be wearing the Cofidis kit instead of Movistar's.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Kiss goodbye to stomach problems with the world's first truly isotonic gel. Science in Sport Go Energy Isotonic. Before you hit the wall, hit back.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
So the question today for Rob Child at Science and Sport is from Stuart Struley from Newport in the USA. I have a question for Science and Sport. I often ride early in the morning, not by choice, and I struggle with what to eat before I leave the house. I try to get out the door a half hour after my alarm goes off. For rides of less than 2 hours, I manage okay by bringing some gels and cubes with me, but I'm sure I'm not maximizing my performance. And for longer rides, I feel like I'm on the edge of bonking for the second half. Any thoughts on what's quick to consume and digest and will provide me with a good base for a long ride would be greatly appreciated. He's got that half hour between the alarm going off and leaving the house.
Yeah, Stuart, thanks for your question. Certainly having a strong coffee as soon as you wake up will help you through your longer or your rides of about 2 hours. But for the longer sessions, I think you want a breakfast comprising of, again, your strong coffee, but also actually some slow digesting foods. So oats, either in the form of porridge or birch or muesli, to provide a sustained energy release that will help you in those longer events. And it's always useful as well to have a SIS double espresso caffeine shot in your back pocket, just in case you start to flag.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you for your questions, Stuart, and thanks to Science and Sport for backing the cycling podcast as they do. We're very grateful to them. They are wonderful sponsors and supporters of ours, and they offer you, the listener, 25% off with the code SISCP25, SISCP25, at the checkout on the website, scienceandsport.com. Fran, we heard from Pablo Lastras before the break there. So a great day for Harada, a great day for Cofidis, a great day for Spain. But it still doesn't feel like Spain. I said this last night. This is positively wild now. It's windy. You can maybe hear the wind coming through. But this, I've never been here. 2 years ago, I know Lionel was here for the Vuelta when it spent a long time in Galicia. But this is my first time here. And I'm amazed at just how underdeveloped such a beautiful place is for tourism. And you were telling me on the way here that it's because all the Spain is known for one thing, and that's sun and beach. And so all the efforts to market Spain as a tourist destination, it's all about that. Whereas here you've got this beautiful, rugged and quite cold corner of Spain.
Yeah, rugged, cold, wet, windy, yet very beautiful. You know, as on the way here, I was pointing you how impressive it is, the amount of trees we find just near the seaside. That's something extraordinary here in Spain, where most of the my computer almost flied. Oh boy!
I know, yeah.
So yeah, about the underdevelopment of this part of Spain. Yeah, taking into account basically that we are the tourism of sun and beach, and when it comes to beaches and when it comes to seas, the Mediterranean Sea is quite peaceful. It's almost a swimming pool compared to the wild, more brave Atlantic Ocean that we have here in Galicia. So basically, when it came to develop infrastructures, they were last in line for most of the last couple of decades. So yeah, on the other hand, it's good to see a part of Spain that is almost virgin, you know. And if you come to do the Camino de Santiago, I don't know what the name of that is in English, you will see how beautiful and different and special the vibe is here.
I'm glad you mentioned ocean and sea, because Daniel and I had a Daniel brought up the distinction between the ocean and the sea. What's the difference between an ocean and a sea? I've actually cheated by looking it up. The difference between the two terms is the seas are smaller than oceans and are usually located where the land and the ocean meet. So yeah. Daniel, if you're listening, you learn something every day. Anyway, moving on, we'll hopefully have some seafood tonight. We had some last night, and that seems to be compulsory here in Galicia, seafood. It was beautiful. Yeah. And we had the most delicious mussels at lunch here.
Oh, I didn't try them.
Oh, they were amazing. I've never seen such big, fleshy mussels.
It was you who ate all of them?
I think I ate most of them. Yeah, delicious, absolutely delicious. Anyway, the incident beyond the finish line today was the other big talking point, I suppose, when the top two riders, Genies and Dylan van Baarle, collided with the race official. And it was an unfortunate incident. Gianni Bugno has come out very strongly against what happened. He's been very critical of the Vuelta organizers for what happened. He is the president, of course, of the CPA, which David Miller today has announced he's standing for president of the CPA. You don't hear much from Gianni Bugno, really, so I don't know whether he's been forced out by this incident or by the fact that David Miller's running for president. I'm not quite sure what's coaxed him out of the woodwork, but it was a pretty shocking incident, and I think Dylan van Baarle was pretty badly hurt. We waited for a while at the Team Sky bus for him to return, and he was very bashed up. Initially, he was going to have a go on his turbo trainer just to get his body moving again, but then he decided against that and remained on the bus. His sports director, Gabriel Rash, was there, however, and he came out and told us a little bit about what happened.
Well, I just saw the video. I saw the person running with the back to the riders, and I saw the riders crash into him, pretty much. So, yeah, he's a person who shouldn't be there, and at least when you're at a place like this, you should look against the riders. It's their safety, that's the most important thing.
And just finally, his body will probably be hurting, his morale as well. But do you know anything about the injuries and whether he's likely to start tomorrow?
I just heard from the doctor so far that it doesn't look like anything is broken. He's just in pain, some bruises. And yeah, we see during the night how it is. And hopefully he can start tomorrow, yeah.
So Fran, I mean, things like that shouldn't happen. It was it looked too narrow. The photographers didn't leave an awful lot of space for the riders or for the official. Don't know what the official was really doing there. And so you just think, well, the riders have you know, these are the two riders who've finished first and second as well, have spent all day battling it out, you know, riding hard. They cross the line and then something like this happens. It's very unfortunate.
The race official that was run over by the riders is the media operations responsible for the finish line, Chema Rodriguez, veteran journalist, expert, more than 30 vueltas under his belt. So it's not a matter of lack of professionalism, rather of circumstances, you know. And
well, sir, but also, I mean, whether it was his fault or not, the there wasn't an awful lot of space there for, yeah. and if it had been a bigger group, which it could well have been, it could have been a big group. It was a recipe for disaster. I mean, it was incredibly narrow, wasn't it? It was almost narrower than single track. It was an accident waiting to happen, you could say. I mean, we shouldn't be blasé about the fact that it's Dylan van Baarle and Alexander Genies who've been hurt. Imagine if it had been, you know, two of the guys who are favourites to win here battling out and that happened to them and one of them was their efforts in the rest of the race was compromised or even ended as a result of that. Then it would be a far more serious issue. But it shouldn't be a more serious issue because of the identity of the riders.
I think it remains equally serious. Yeah. I mean, I think it is it's an unfortunate accident that could have well caused very severe injuries to three individuals, and it shouldn't have happened, definitely.
Well, listen, before we go tonight, a couple of little announcements. We, on Monday, will be holding our first of the Vuelta press conference episodes, which we started at the... I think we started at the Giro, where you can call in a question. It's not so much calling, it's leaving a voice memo on our WhatsApp number. The number is +447971338205. That's +447971338205. Leave a voice memo on that WhatsApp number. We'll pick it up and you'll hear the questions and we'll try to answer your questions on Monday. We'll be joined by Lionel Burney for that, hopefully Daniel as well, but we'll get Lionel on the line for that and it'll be you and me as well, Fran. We'll be recording that on Monday. The other thing I have to say is that we are running a competition. It's not so much a competition, it's a prize draw. If you sign up as a friend of the podcast during the Vuelta, you will go into the hat to win some Rafa and Science and Sport swag, quite generous swag from Rafa and Science and Sport. If you're already a friend of the podcast, if you've signed up already this year, you will automatically be in that draw as well. You can sign up as a friend of the podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com and you'll get lots of exclusive episodes there as well. And there are a few more still to come this year. So the other thing we should mention is Kilometre Zero. Tomorrow is looks at the trend for steeper and steeper climbs and smaller gears. Mm-hmm. And we've spoken to some riders, mechanics, ex-riders, physiotherapists, just about the different demands that that puts on the body, the different technique in riding climbs with smaller gears. So I think that's quite interesting. That's coming up tomorrow morning. Fran, we should hit the road. 2.5 hours.
No. Before leaving, we should discuss on the record what's happening tomorrow on the way to La Camperona. Who is driving? Because I have had very, really, really awful experiences driving up La Camperona with those steep gradients up to 20%. That's very hard to navigate, and it would be unpleasant for me to do that again.
I'm happy to drive. We don't have the most powerful car, do we?
No, I mean, it suffers a lot on the climbs, you
know.
It
struggles on the climbs. So if it was a rider, which rider would it be?
Ian Stannard.
Very harsh on Ian Stannard. But we better jump in Ian Stannard now and get to our hotel, I think, Fran. Thank you very much, Fran.
Thank you, Richard.
See you tomorrow.